Each month, I like to start with our candy bar award, and of course, unfortunately, I have the candy bars in my room, so I'll get those to the people later. Sitting here thinking, oh, I think I have something. Today, we have two different people that are eligible for the award, and of course, we do these to always motivate us to expand and move beyond what we currently do. Now, the first one is Nate, and I'm going to put my glasses on because the type is very small. And the eyes aren't what they used to be. We use hazardous chemical substances in our warehouse, which have rules and procedures for handling according to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. Nate researched and created a list of hazardous chemicals known to be present in our warehouse. He then recommended removing some that are no longer used and adding new chemicals to the list. He gathered the data sheets for each chemical, including information about the chemical itself, the hazard identification, ingredients, first aid measures, firefighting measures. Now, some of these you have to, well, never mind, I won't go there. You have to know they're really not that scary. Accidental release measures, handling and storage requirements, exposure controls, personal protection if needed, disposal considerations, and other regulatory information. We are now in full compliance with the OSHA standards and have a more safe and secure workplace. Thank you, Nate, for leading this hazardous substance effort and doing it so professionally. And I can do it. And that one goes. And the government will save you, in case you were worried. The second one goes to Aldina. Both of you are sitting in the hallway. Aldina is continually looking to ensure our customers are served as well as any customer ever. I'm not sure as what that means, but in her never-ending quest to improve customer service and support, Aldina conducted some research and discovered that during our busiest time of the year, June to September, in case you didn't know when that was, we ship 40% of our sunlight materials to our East Coast customers and 30% to customers in the Central Time Zone. Our phone and live chat hours were 9:30 to 4:30, hours not conducive to helping those most likely to need help. Good idea. She suggested that we extend our hours from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily to enable us to better serve our East Coast and Central Time Zone customers. As of February 1st this year, we are now accommodating more of our customers nationwide. Thank you, Aldina, for always keeping our customers uppermost in mind and finding ways to continually make their experience smoother and better. And that's so true. Thank you, Aldina. Appreciate it. Take those off. I asked Wayne if he thought you might be interested in hearing about our India trip. He said, oh, I think they would. So that's what I'm going to talk about, because that's easy. Don't have to come up with something very creative. I want to start by saying thank you to all of you for allowing us to go. When John and I first started traveling, oh, probably 10 years ago, we'd meet up with all these retirees, and we'd say, oh, well, we still work, and they'd say, wow, how can you be gone for 2 weeks at a time? If you're the boss, how does that happen? I said, well, we have a great team, and they handle everything while we're gone. I get no emails saying, this tragedy occurred, come and save us. So thank you for allowing us to do that. I count it as a huge privilege. So why in the world did we go to India? I think most of you know I have the huge privilege of serving on an agency board. That's called Frontiers. And last January, not this past one, but the one before that, we were in a meeting in Phoenix, and the CEO of the agency said, why don't we have next year's board meeting in India? And we all kind of went, oh. And we all said, sure, let's do that. So we took the year to plan and to fly into Delhi, the capital of India. But why would he even make that radical kind of even a suggestion? India, for Frontiers, is kind of a new push and area that they're strategizing toward. And that goes back to the famous missiologist, Dr. Ralph Winter. Back in the 70s, he was teaching at Fuller Seminary, and he had a number of students that would come in. He was teaching at the School of Mission, and he'd have students come back to try to figure out how to do it more effectively. And he always asked the students, well, where do you serve? Where are you working? And at one point, he had this epiphany kind of a thought. He said to himself, I could be here 1,000 years and never meet anyone who's a missionary to Afghanistan or Pakistan. All of them were going back to Nigeria, Mexico, Guatemala, places that still need the gospel. But the point of that all was that there were places that weren't being touched at all. And out of that very unusual and radical thought, the whole unreached peoples movement came to light. Second radical thought that he had was, you know, if we believe, like the Bible says, that there's going to be some in heaven from every people, nation, tongue, and tribe, you know, we probably need to count them and be purposeful and find them. Send people directly to them. So that started the whole, let's count how many unreached people groups still need the Bible. Let's figure out where we're going to go that's new and a different. Let's come up with new strategies. It radicalized the whole missions movement. It was one of those concepts that kind of just turned everybody's thinking on their head. You know, it's really not rocket science. I mean, if you know what you need to do, you need to make a list and check it off, right? Didn't seem so strange, but it was such a new and different idea. So Frontiers has spent probably the last 10 years thinking through, okay, where have people, Muslim peoples, which is what they deal with, never had a chance to hear about Jesus? Where has that happened in the world? They did the research, and I was in a meeting where the guy who was kind of heading that all up stood up with chagrin in his face, and he said, boy, you know, as we've been counting this, we came to realize that there's almost more unreached people groups in India than the rest of the world combined. So we didn't know, because there's so many Hindus in India. India's just crowded. When you go there, it's just loaded with people. Most of them are Hindus. But it turns out that many of the people who have never had a chance to hear about Jesus also live in India as Muslim peoples. So we flew to India to meet some of the people who have moved from the U.S. or other parts of the world, halfway around the world, to live in, started in Delhi, which just recently got the award for being the most polluted city on the planet. Not one of those awards you really want to receive, but boy, when you're there, you step into the airport and there's smoke inside the airport building and you're going, wow, I hope I can breathe here. You step outdoors and the sky is white. It's not blue. Everywhere there's trash on the sides of the road. I've just never been in such a dirty place. I actually asked someone, are there any Dutch people working here? I thought they wouldn't be able to stand it. They'd get their brooms. There's none. Shame on the Dutch. As you drive along, you know, the roads all have potholes. It's just the dirtiest place I've ever been. The people are precious, but the environment is very, very, very hard to live in. I don't think I could do it. Boy, after a week, I thought, oh, just let me go home to my clean house where the walls don't have cracks and there's not chips out of the buildings. There's not a building that is solid. They all look... Anyway, it's a tough environment, so bless these people have gone. So we met with them. We prayed with them. It turns out, when you go to India... they first had to find the Muslim peoples because, of course, they don't have name tags on them. And, you know, the dress is so diverse in India, you can't always even tell from how they dress. It turns out that what they've discovered is that most of the Muslim peoples live in the very oldest parts of town. So if you think Delhi, which is, oh my goodness, how many billion people? 18 million people live in the city. It's just enormous. The very center of that is where the Muslim peoples live. And as I thought about that, I thought, well, I bet you that's because of partition, which, of course, was before most of us were born, 1947, when India gained independence from Britain. At that point, they decided to divide India and Pakistan. They said, okay, we'll have a land for the Muslims and we'll have a land for the Hindus. And you had this massive transfer of people. And they don't know exactly how many people died. They speculate that it was as many as 1.5 million people died in this transfer as they're moving from their homeland to another new place where they don't know anybody. They basically just stabbed each other as they went by and people... Anyway, it was a terrible time in history. But what happened in these older parts of town, you have people who have been living in the same house for 700 years. You think, okay, I'm not moving to Pakistan just because partition happened, if you've lived there that long. When you drive up, we happen to have a very nice taxi. That's the place where you find the bicycle rickshaws, the carts that are actually powered by people. Didn't see too many of those in the rest of India. But in those very old parts of town where it's crowded and tight and poor, Muslim peoples in India are prejudiced against, right? If you think back to partition, India is a Hindu land. Well, no, there's lots of Muslims that live here. But because of partition and the hatred, there's prejudice against them. They have less rights, they have less freedoms, they live in more fear, much like the Christians. I think that was one of the things I walked away with when I was there. I think Christians and Muslims have a lot more similarities in India than they even have here. They both serve one God. They both try to live by a moral code. That's very different than Hinduism with its, I don't know how many million gods. It's many million, 300 million I think is the number I've heard. You know, if you're talking about that kind of, that's a contrast that's almost a barrier, impossible to get over. So it felt like there was a more strong sense of commodity, and we're in kind of the same boat together. We're both kind of oppressed, we're both kind of held back. Basically while we were there, we visited some of the people that live there, precious, precious people who love the Muslim peoples, live in their communities, in these terrible communities, walk the streets, seek to serve them as best they can, pray for them. Wow, we need to remember them in prayer, because boy, talk about a tough road. Precious, precious people who believe that Jesus is a hope for the peoples of this world. That was our first week. Really a great week, and at the end of where I thought, wow, don't I get to go home yet? I didn't. I had a whole nother week. The second week, we flew. And if you haven't flown on India's airlines, that's also its own kind of experience. I think their planes are, I don't know where they'd come from. Maybe Russia? I don't know. They've been used, well used, before you get on them. Scary. Anyway, God is good. We flew to Gujarat State. We started in Delhi, which of course is the capital. Flew to Gujarat State, which John and I have chosen as a state to invest in. So we support all three ministries that Mission India does. In that state. We do children's Bible clubs, adult literacy, and evangelism all in that state. So it was neat to be able to go and meet the partners. Mission India works with local people. They give them the training and then set them loose to do whatever they can do. So it's not a top-down kind of a thing. It's more, let us empower you and you go out and do the ministry, which is a huge privilege. So they brought them in. It was the first time they'd ever had Westerners come in and see them. And oh my goodness, they showed up every morning way before we were ready to start. And they couldn't wait to tell us their story and how they'd been saved and what they were doing. And their passion was evident. It was all coming through an interpreter. So, because none of them spoke English. And of course, we didn't speak any Gujarati, which... Sorry. but really, really a neat experience. They gave their testimony of how they'd been saved. Most of them were relatively new believers. Gujarat State is, they weren't sure whether or not we'd be able to even go. It happens to be the state of the current man who's running for prime minister. They believe he will be elected because he's anti-corruption, which of course is probably India's main problem. Corruption's just everywhere. It's reft. It's just the bribe is just... Anyway, corruption is their number... I would say it's probably their number one problem outside of not knowing Jesus. So he's very anti-corruption, and they believe he'll be elected. He comes from Gujarat State, and he is one of those people who belong to the RSS party, a particular party that believes that India should be for Hindus only. He comes from that state, and that state is very much, they have anti-conversion laws. It's a tough place to work. Okay, we came in and we were always very circumspect. When you have hair like mine, you can't be as circumspect terribly. But anyway, it worked out fine. We had a chance to meet with them in a relatively safe situation. And we need to just remember to pray for those people because it's a tough, tough road. You're working with they talk about Hindus being anti-fighting, but when religion's on the line, that probably gets put to the side. And we hear of communities that are bombed and fired and burned, and it's a reality. The world is a scary place. And while we were there, we had a chance to visit a couple of children's Bible clubs. It's very fun. The kids come. It's an after-school program, and the precious women that lead it are all volunteers. They give up 2 hours out of every one of their days. They help their kids with the homework. They just love on them and care for them. And it's one of those situations where kids come because it's the best opportunity that they have to move forward, because we believe education is, of course, critical. So these moms, these women, just invest in the lives of these kids, and if they have an opportunity to share the hope with them, they do that as well. The kids learned some songs, and they sang some of those for us, and a lot of them came in national dress, which was adorable. It was just as fun as anything to see. Then we also visited an adult literacy class, and there, of course, when you go to India, usually the gift that you get is some kind of a flower, and we walked out of there with probably five big rings of flour with the marigolds around your neck, and you're kind of walking like this because they're heavy. You know, it's just precious, and they want to just show how much they're glad you're there, and it's a way of them welcoming you. In the adult literacy class, you have women, of course, that are as held back because you can't read. If you can't read, you can't get on the bus, you can't take your children to the doctor, you get cheated by shopkeepers. Think of what you can't do when you can't read. Here you have women, again, taught by a volunteer who comes every day. She comes in a little rickshaw and comes to a place where they've rented a room, or they find a room in a place that they can stay. And these women learn how to get a fifth grade education as a result of this time. It's an amazing program. And of course, very fun to meet with them and shake their hand. They all want to shake your hand because people from the West, we're just interesting, aren't we? Just like we think they are. One of the things... And then on Sunday, this was my favorite story. Sunday we actually went to church. We went to an Indian church. And the pastor was saved through one of the programs that Mission India does. He belongs, I can't remember the people group's name, but it starts with a B, and they live in northern Gujarat, northeastern Gujarat state in Rajasthan, and then one other state. They're called the monkey people in India. They are as despised and hated as any group. They aren't even considered people. They're monkeys. They're monkeys. They live in tents. They're nomadic. They don't stay in one place. They live in the jungle and they collect the fruits and the vegetables that are there. This is a despised people group. The pastor was of this people group. When we came, we went. They opened up. They had just built their own church with their own two hands. It was a couple of brothers that work as construction guys, and they built the church. And their actual ceremony was going to be opening the week later, but they opened it up a week before us. And the church was full, people singing and dancing and praising the Lord. It was awesome. It's awesome to go. But the story that's so neat is we went with some of the directors from that state. They came with us. And they would just marvel. I can't believe this. Look at it. It's beautiful. If I took you to their tents, you just would, you know, they're dirty, they're messy, they're yucky. Look at the transformation power of the gospel was phenomenal. That church was built above their home. So they pulled steps up there, and they had us in for lunch. We had lunch at their home. And they feed everybody in their congregation every Sunday. This is a people group that has nothing without the gospel. The transformation that occurs in the lives of these people, they have enough to share with everyone who comes to church. They bring in people from the United States and feed us lunch. I couldn't believe it. I thought, totally honored and awestruck by what God had done. And the power of transformation was so evident. And what a privilege that was to go. One of the things we did while we were there was we visited a Hindu temple. If you haven't had a chance to go, maybe you don't want to. The temple is in the middle of a big courtyard. And there's all buildings around it, a couple of gates to go in. You go up the steps, and the god is sitting behind a golden screen. Now, the god needs to be dressed. can't dress himself, right? Wow, what's the servant God can't even dress himself? Come on, we can even do that. But you know, they've got a whole room, a whole vault that has all the different clothes that they put on them. Some of them are golden, and you know, they've got them sitting out there, and how beautiful they are. And I thought, really? So what we did was we walked around the courtyard, and you have to go in a particular direction. If you go the other way, you're very offensive. Take your shoes off. And the spirit there is very dark. It's a very dark spirit. You think, no, this is not the hope of India. This is not what we want. So if we can bring transformation and light out of the darkness, wow, it would probably be a good thing. I just walked around and kind of sang under my breath, try to protect yourself. But there's power there. There is power there. I don't think it's power that brings light or comfort or healing. So we need to just pray. Politically, I talked about that. I think I've covered it all. So I just, India. We see outposts of light when we visited the church, and we saw the transforming power of the gospel. But for the most part, it has a lot of dark places yet. There's a spirit of heaviness. There's a spirit of thousands and thousands of years of worshiping evil spirits, which is really what the Hindu gods are, right? They're not gods that have the best interest of their people. It's more just, let's appease you somehow to try to keep the powers of darkness back by, maybe if we give you this cut-up chicken, maybe if we give you this offering, you'll somehow stay away and, you know, keep my family safe. Wow. If we can bring hope to the people of India, wouldn't that be a great thing? So thanks so much. I'd be more than glad to try to answer any questions. You'd, of course, get as limited as I am. Questions? The costumes are amazing. Go ahead.
How did you choose the province to support specifically?
We asked. We wanted... that's a good question. In India, there's places where the gospel's really taking root. A lot of the provinces in the south are very, I think, 7% Christian. Some of them in the northeast are, I think, something like 70% Christian. So there's places where the gospel has really been transforming. And you never want to stop working from where God is moving. Yeah. But we went to the leaders of the agency and we said, we always want to go to the edges. We always want to go to the places where there hasn't been any work done yet. We're willing to take less results, less, in order to move forward. So then that's what they assigned us. Does that answer the question? If you haven't been, the costumes are amazing. The costumes are, you know, the buildings are dirty, but the outfits are phenomenal. And you get these saris that are hot pink and, wow, they're just beautiful. I should have brought pictures, but John's the photographer, and he takes pictures of cars and traffic. Sorry. I got home and I thought, wait a minute. Any other questions?
A couple. Did you sense any kind of, wherever you were, any kind of hostility or any kind of danger or any kind of, or were you pretty well protected?
Yeah, that's a good question. You always feel a little insecure. Anytime you have corruption that rules, that, you know, your rule of law isn't going to be strong either then, right? Yeah.
And when you say crowded, I'm trying to picture crowded because I'm kind of like claustrophobic in Boston or New York City even. So is it like shoulder to shoulder crowded? Like,
how many people live in New York City?
I don't know.
Maybe 8 million? 12?
8 to 12.
I think 18, Delhi.
So like when you're walking down the street, are there just people?
Always.
Everywhere.
Traffic is probably the most interesting piece in India. That's why John took as many. He's always trying to capture what it really looks like, but of course you can't experience it on a camera. Here we have lanes, and each car stays in a lane. Right? Mm-hmm. Here we have stop signs and stop lights. Those do not exist in India. It's all weaving in and out, and oh, there's an opening, I'll slide over here, and there's probably on a road as wide as Broadway, you might have 8 pieces of cars moving. And it's not just cars. You know, we're driving along in our nice van, and we pass 2 elephants with 2 people on each.
Oh, wow.
Right in the middle of Delhi, this is the capital city, they're just walking down the road, part of the traffic. And then in front of them were 2 bullock carts pulled by 2, you know, house with the huge horns. And I'm thinking, this is the capital city of the country, and it's strange. Saw camels being driven and ridden down the road. And of course, then you have cows that are everywhere. They're just loose, and they're worshipped. They are considered a god, so you may not hurt them at all. In fact, at the temple site, we had a cow that came kind of after John, and it was kind of like, just set your bag down and leave. You know, it's one of those, because, you can't take out any aggression against the god. I mean, anyway, it was a little daunting. There's goats, it's just dirty, dirty, because all of those animals just move through where they are. People are precious. You know, when you asked if I felt afraid, I just made sure I smiled at all the women that I met. Try not to smile at the men. You don't want to give a wrong message. And all of them smiled back. You know, they were just, people are people. People just want you to like them. They just want you to know them and love them. That's not hard. So, any other questions? Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, not this one. You're the wrong one.
How about that?